Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Hey guys, me and Adam are bringing you a new episode of Locked On Pacers. We talk about a lot of stuff in this episode, starting off talking about the tampering charges filed against the Lakers about Paul George and Magic Johnson. Then we transition into talking about who me and Adam think are the top five NBA, not ABA, Pacers players of all time. You might be kind of surprised at some of the people who make the list and who they are. And at the end, we close out with some of the Pacers lineups and how the team may try to stagger the minutes of Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this week's episode. As always, our presenting sponsor is SeatGeek. Use the code LONBA at checkout with SeatGeek to get $20 off your purchase. SeatGeek is a great ticket aggregating site. I'm going to use it to get tickets to the Pacers preseason games, and you should too if you plan on going. And as always, that code is LONBA. We hope you enjoy the show.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, so Adam, last weekend, Herb Simon filed a tampering charge against the Lakers. What do you think about that?
Well, we got a little bit screwed on our podcast because we did this podcast that Sunday afternoon, I think.
How do we keep doing that?
I don't know. It's like they purposely are trying to get us right as we record or after we record. They try to release some breaking news because we were talking about last week how we were so like kind of bored because there wasn't much going on with the Pacers and we're trying to talk about things that are repeating itself over and over again. So it just kind of stunk, but now we kept coming today and we're like, it seemed like it was so long ago because after the whole week of Kyrie stuff, the tampering thing went to the side. It was like a one-day news story and then it kind of faded away because it's not that big of a deal in my opinion because in the NBA, there's all kinds of tampering all over the place, right? I mean, players tamper with other players, agents and GMs are talking whether their players are on their team or not. I mean, there's just all kinds of tampering. The question is really, did Matt Johnson's thing on Jimmy Kimmel, is that tampering? Because if that is tampering, then there'll be some punishment. But if that's not considered tampering, I don't see where the Pacers can win a tampering case.
Right, and it's funny because you've got to think he was kind of joking on Kimmel, you know? Like, I'm sure they can just say that was not actually tampering because it wasn't contact with Paul George directly. But that's such like an obvious, like, okay, if they see each other in person, he said he's going to wink at him a bunch. Like, that's a dead giveaway to me. And it's funny because I read Bobby Marks' article, and according to him, that's like not tampering at all. And like Magic Johnson can even talk to Paul George's agent, Aaron Mintz, and it doesn't constitute as tampering unless they literally talk about Paul George. Like there's so much gray area with this that it's really hard to say.
Yeah, and the NBA has basically stopped enforcing tampering with players. So like if you're like James Harden kind of recruited Chris Paul before Chris Paul wasn't a Clipper anymore. Like there's certain things like that they just don't care about. It's only like the GM to the player kind of thing, which it's why this whole thing's kind of in this gray area and it could set the mark for what is tampering in the future because for the past, I don't know how many seasons, basically there's been kind of this, nobody knows what tampering is or anything. And now they're going to try to like, maybe this like draws a line in the sand.
Well, J.R. Smith, wow, that was the wrong player. Draymond Green, like, texted Kevin Durant after that finals game. Remember that story? Like, that is
That's like tampering, sort of.
Textbook tampering to me. But they don't really enforce the player-to-player stuff, so I don't think that really matters at all. Like, players can talk anyway. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, I don't know where the Pacers – what the Pacers even get from it or what the – it's probably going to be a fine like anything else in the NBA, like maybe a few $100,000 to Matt Johnson, maybe some to the owners. But, like, for the Pacers, it's not going to matter. Like, what are they going to get from it? Like, they're not going to get some pick or Paul George back. They already traded Paul George to a different team. So, it seems kind of like almost like a sore loser type of thing.
Yeah, I think it's just like a petty move because Herb Simon's just mad that he's going to lose revenue because he's the money guy because of something he can't control. So I'm sure that's the only reason he did it because there's literally nothing the Pacers can get out of it except for like winning a lawsuit.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for the Pacers because there was something going on. I mean, Paul George wanted to go to LA, so like, and his agent kind of undercut their whole trade position. But I don't know if there was like Meta Johnson went up to him and is like, trying to like convince him to come. I think part of it was coming to LA, whether Magic was there. I mean, obviously it was like a complete dumpster fire. Maybe he wouldn't go there, but as long as there was some competence there, which by hiring Magic Johnson, the Lakers became kind of competent all of a sudden. He was going to go there no matter what, it seemed like. It seemed like it was just like a, it was destined to be.
Well, didn't the stories about him going to LA come out before Magic even got hired as the GM, like in February?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been talking about him going to LA for like three seasons now, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Like, I just think there was always that thought, well, the Lakers stink, so why would he go there? But then they got Magic, so things kind of turned around. I mean, they've, right after Kobe, the Lakers have basically been awful.
Yeah, they're just set up with Lonzo and all the cap space now that everyone's like excited about them again.
Yeah, I just wonder if LeBron goes to the Lakers, will there be enough cap space for Paul George and him both to sign huge contracts?
There is. It's close, though. Eric Pincus at Bleacher Report and B-Ball Insiders wrote this really long article about how they can get the space for both, and there's like a million scenarios. It's not that hard, actually.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think I read that. But then also there's the Kyrie aspect of this. So Kyrie is kind of traded at this point. I mean, they're waiting for the physical call to pass. But do you think at all by the Kyrie offer that you think the Pacers maybe feel like they got screwed a little bit? Like, does it kind of change your opinion of tampering issues? Because it seemed like if Paul George didn't release whatever he did, didn't release about that he was going to go to LA, the Pacers could have gotten a close to Kyrie offer. Is that even like, think that's real? Or am I just imagining that kind of?
It's kind of funny. Like if Paul George had a really bad hip injury, then I would have expected him to be worth Oladipo and Sabonis. So that's kind of funny. I don't know. It's kind of hard to say just because of how everything has unfolded with this hip and how like the discussions are going back and how people are saying that the injury was factored into the original discussions, but it just seems like such a high value for a guy that it does seem like, you know, Paul George's value would have been higher had there not been so many clouds hanging over him.
Yeah, I mean, I think also if he had been traded at the trade deadline, his value was there. So, and I think his agent's message kind of was the last nail in the coffin, but I think teams are already thinking he's going to go to LA anyways. So I'm not sure it really depressed his trade value a ton. So I just – the only way you can get tampering to officially, like, just be a paper trail, right, for it to be, like, a serious tampering charge. Like, if there's, like, he met with Paul George, like, at a resort because they're both there, like, how do they prove they talked and what they talked – you know what I mean? There's a whole barrier between, like, what you can prove and what you can't.
Yeah. It's literally impossible because, like I said, if they – like, Aaron Mintz can talk to Magic Johnson, but it could be about literally anything. Like, you can't prove anything from a phone call unless you literally have the dialogue from the phone call.
Yeah, and I'm sure Aaron Mintz has multiple NBA players who – I'm sure some of them either are free agent or play for the Lakers or something.
I'm sure Aaron Mintz has multiple cell phones, and so –
yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't put any hope in anything happening with the tampering case. I mean, maybe something, like, crazy happens, but –
I mean, we're not getting Paul George back, so the only hope is that, like, they lose a first-round pick or something.
Yeah, my only thing would be if they banned the Lakers from signing him. That would be kind of so funny. But I don't know really if they could do that because I think the players union would get pissed.
And then Paul George, as a response, comes back to his second favorite city to play for, the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, you see him at the Floyd fight yesterday, the Floyd and Conor McGregor fight, talking about how he loved Indiana. It's where he grew up, but it was time to move on for his family. It's like
– whatever.
Like, he didn't even move on. Like, he was traded. It wasn't like if he wanted to – I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm going to get more into my pissiness at Paul George.
Every time he says something, he makes it worse. I don't understand.
Yeah, he needs to just be like, I got traded. I'm going to my next team and not talk anymore about that issue at least.
Right. Well, speaking of trades, there's a pretty big trade with Kyrie Irving that we kind of discussed. And for those of you that listen but don't get to hear us talk off the air, me and Adam were discussing at one point doing a podcast about how Isaiah Thomas could end up coming to the Pacers after this coming season when he's a free agent, just for some fun consideration. But now that this is all going down, it kind of changed our dynamic for that discussion.
Yeah, and like all week I saw all these stories about, okay, now that Isaiah got traded, is he going to re-sign? Where can he re-sign? Who can sign? Who has the money? They talked about the Bulls having the money for him. But like if the Pacers, like we talked about off air, were able to get to they cut Collison and Bogdanovich and they get rid of Young's contract, they'll have like $60 million in space. And if they can offer Isaiah like the $40 million max, then maybe another team can offer him that could get him here. But for bad, I don't know about that.
Well, and what I was thinking too is that he always has talked about backing up the Brinks truck or whatever he said, because he wants the max. And so maybe no one's going to give him the max because of this injury. So the Pacers could, in theory, give it to him and then not give him 5 or 4 years, just give him like 2 or 3. Maybe he'd sign it, and then it wouldn't be such a bad contract because it's shorter.
Yeah, and there's also a lot about what LeBron ends up doing. I mean,
yeah, it totally is.
Like, I mean, like, as we're talking, the trade still hasn't cleared, so I don't know what's going to happen. I assume it's going to clear eventually. Maybe throw in a second round pick to satisfy Cleveland's antsiness. But if Isaiah and him have good chemistry and something works, they're not going to leave each other. Because my guess is the Cavs will be in the NBA Finals next year, whether no matter who's on it. As long as LeBron's on that team, the Cavs are making the Eastern, making the NBA Finals. I mean, he's the best player.
Even if LeBron leaves, they're not really like set up for the future, so they might as well just like keep him with Jay Crowder and Kevin Love, right? Like, that's still a pretty dang good team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, though, let's say the Brooklyn pick skyrockets up, they could just sell off Kevin Love, trade off Kevin Love, just try to trade everything.
Right.
Sort of. But you can't win the lottery 3 times in 4 years again. That might be rigged.
It'll be pretty interesting coming in. Like, if they're at the trade deadline and they even think LeBron might stay and they think they have a shot at the title, like if they use the Brooklyn pick to trade for DeMarcus Cousins or someone like that.
Yeah, I heard that they could use that pick to get another big-name player, which could kind of change things.
They would love Thaddeus Young, LOL.
Yeah, not for the number like 10 pick, maybe for like a second round. I mean, they could. So I don't. Does Boston have any like late first rounders again?
They have their own. Yeah, their own.
So they could get that, and then that pick could be used to trade for like a mediocre player, and then trade the top pick for a really good player. Like, there's a way they could flip all these picks into players that could play for the team, because right. They're just. I mean, you know, the Cavs were. They're not better than the Warriors, but they weren't like that far off. They were a couple. You know, they could have been 2-2 in the series. I mean, they're probably not going to win most times just because. Warriors have 3 of the best 4 players on the planet, or 2 of the best 3 players on the planet, 4 of the best 25, whatever. But it's just interesting to see what they could put together.
Yeah, but this is a Pacers podcast, so we need to discuss how the trade kind of affects the Pacers. And the answer is mostly not really, not at all. But, I mean, it's just the 2 best teams in the East swapping their 2 of their best players, and the Pacers are not in that hierarchy of teams, so it doesn't really matter for them now. But in the future, when they're trying to be good, and the Cavs now have this young player with the Brooklyn pick and whoever else they may end up getting, if they do get extra draft compensation, they could be good when the Pacers are good. And it's just one more team that they have to deal with when they're peaking in Miles Turner's prime.
Yeah, so what do we think the Pacers' peak is? Like 3 seasons, give or take? Like, well, not peak, but like the them being a playoff team again. Are we say 3 seasons they should be a playoff team again consistently?
Yeah, 3 seasons for the playoffs, and then like 6 probably for their peak when Miles Turner's 27, 28.
Yeah, and we have to remember that most guys on the roster right now besides Turner probably won't be on the roster in 6 years unless Oladipo could be, but like I'm thinking like those are the only 2 stars that will be on the roster.
I would say Oladipo and Glenn are the only 2 with even a chance, right?
Well, Sabonis. You don't know about Sabonis.
Oh, right. And Leaf. Gosh, I always forget about those guys.
Yeah, well, those are all hit or misses still. So
yeah.
But I do agree with you that it does kind of push –
I guess Sabonis proved enough that he should be around. But
yeah, but I agree with you that it gives the Celtics another like chance. So like right, part of the Kyrie trade was the whole deal was that
gives the Cavs another chance.
Get some things to try to win now and not worry about the future, but also have that backup. So there's all of that.
It kinda right.
But what I'm gonna bring it back to the Pacers a little bit. So when we were talking over we were texting over this week about Isaiah a little bit, and I was basically saying that one of the ways the Pacers can get Isaiah Thomas is obviously if LeBron leaves, and then so they're gonna have some cap space. But they, if they're in like an up and coming team in some sense, so like kind of like Denver Nuggets last year, where the Nuggets won 35 games, and so all of a sudden we can kind of like, oh, maybe they're gonna be kind of good in the future. So Paul Millsap went there. So if the Pacers exceed expectations and say this season Miles Turner shows that he's like really good, you know, 20 points plus a game, while Debo shows up that he's pretty good, that could push the Pacers. They accelerate the timeline and they could try to go after and sign Isaiah to like a huge contract and then maybe be pretty decent next season, because if LeBron leaves the East is open for the taking. Cause I mean, the Celtics would be decent, but and the Wizards, but besides that, I mean, any team can be top 4.
Well, I wouldn't really consider them like a top team in the East, but just having Isaiah Thomas and Miles Turner, it would be a cool and good team for a couple of years, which I mean, that's fine. It wouldn't really fit the timeline of what the Pacers are trying to do. Per se, but if they do surprise, right, like you said, and they're better than people thought, maybe it would make sense to bring in, you know, an all-NBA point guard.
Yeah, I also think it'd be fun for the fan base. Isaiah's like a really just – if when he's healthy at least, I don't know how healthy he is, but when he's really healthy and he's really on playing at his like kind of peak level last season, he's fun to watch, and he kind of adds a dimension to the fan base where people get excited for a guy like him because he's short like all of us NBA fans who wish we could play in the NBA. So it adds that a little bit to it. He's definitely probably worth the money at least.
Right, and the Pacers always like having a big name guy. Like they always seem to have just like one face of the franchise, if that makes sense. And like we'll see if Turner can do it if they end up being that good. But if not, you know, why not sign this guy that seems to be a fan favorite everywhere he goes?
Yeah, plus they could. I mean, Isaiah and Turner could run some nice pick and roll type of thing. I mean, there's some kind of cool things they could do together for sure.
Right.
With Turner's passing and Isaiah's cutting, there's some good things they could do there. It'd be interesting to watch if that could happen. But that's a year away and. It's probably a long shot away.
Yeah, but it's just fun to speculate how they could team build, and it totally depends on how the season goes, which it's impossible to say for now.
Yeah, I mean, you just never know who can be available, right? I mean, at the end of the season, if another team is miserable, another player be available for trade. I mean, you just never know. It depends how a team does. Like, there's a good chance Anthony Davis is on the trading block next offseason.
Let's roll that out. The Pacers are not getting Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, you don't know. As an example of, you don't know what could happen. You know,
right.
Some player, absolutely. Like, last season, nobody would have thought Jokic was going to be as good as he was. He became kind of that next, in that next level of who could be a superstar. You know, Giannis took another level. You just don't know what's going to happen in the league.
Right.
It changed, especially with the way players are moving. And, each year, a different thing could happen. Something, and it could change the whole balance power in each conference almost.
Yeah. We'll have to see. It really depends more on this season for the Pacers, too. Like, even if there's these shocking players that become good, they're not getting any of them if they only win 20-something games.
Yeah, no, if they win 20-something games, you're getting Marvin Bagley, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the hope. Or anyone who pairs well with Turner, which is everyone in the draft except for Ayton, it looks like. So.
Yeah, I don't even care about – well, I just care about getting the best player.
Yeah, you got to get the best player available.
You get a superstar.
We should talk about the draft on a future episode.
Yeah, we should, because we're probably going to be in the top eight, so we should talk about some of the top eight picks.
Right, and hopefully with their pick, they can draft someone who could be a top player in franchise history.
Yeah, great transition there, by the way.
As we alluded to last week, we wanted to discuss who we think the top five Pacers are in history of the franchise and have you guys discuss it with us on Twitter.
So do you want to do reverse order from, like, five up, or you want to go down?
I think going down is easier. One to five, but just because there'll be some discrepancies possibly, I don't actually know. So we'll have to see. I think we both will have the same number one though.
So let's go down from one.
Okay. Well, who's number one?
Well, I assume yours is Reggie Miller, just like me.
It is Reggie Miller. I don't think you can go another direction. The only guy to ever get the Pacers to the finals has to be number one, right?
Yeah, I'm just gonna go real quick what I basically wrote down for Reggie. So I was doing it based on seasons they played, their kind of peak moment with the peak stats points-wise, basically, and then how many chances they have won a title when they play for the Pacers. So, like, basically with Reggie as, like, the leader of the team, the Pacers had, like, three chances to win a title, 94, 95, and 2000. Any one of those 3 years, they were good enough to win a title, and they were one of the best, let's say, three or four teams in the league. And then, I mean, he just – at his peak, Reggie put up, like, 25 points a game, which is what no other player besides Danny Granger did for one season, so –
yeah,
he's really good.
He's historic. He just meant so much to Indianapolis, too, you know.
Yeah. And
like him and Peyton Manning running at the same time for like the tiny bit. And Reggie, it was so sad when he left. Like he was so iconic for Indianapolis and he was so good in the NBA. Like the entire blog I write for is named after like him doing something in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, he's the only, if you take out the ABA history of the Pacers, because not a lot of people just know a lot about the ABA, me included, Reggie's like, when you think of Pacer basketball, you say Reggie Miller. He's the first name.
Yeah.
You don't say anything else. You say Reggie Miller, and then that's where you go from there. It's sad they never won a championship, really.
Our competing podcast, the Miller Time Podcast, is named after the player we're talking about.
Yeah, if only they could have got one championship, that would have cemented his career on a whole other level.
But that they played the Sonics in the finals, right? I don't remember, actually.
No, they played the Lakers. They played the –
I knew that. That team was way better.
They had in like 94 and 95, they lost to the Magic and Knicks in the Eastern Finals, but they were as good as those teams. Those teams it was circumstance and home court advantage at the time. And then like 98, they took the Bulls to seven in the East Finals that last year. And then 2000, they won the East and lost to Kobe Bryant and Magic Johnson. No, Shaquille O'Neal's first championship team.
Yeah, that team was really good. They won a lot of titles, so I guess you can't feel too bad about that one.
That was probably the best team of the 2000 decade, Kobe right. Check.
But I think with the Reggie Miller number one discussion, it should come down to this too. There's a 30 for 30 about the guy. There's not a 30 for 30 about anyone else on the Pacers. He's number one.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty clear.
And longevity. He's the only guy to play on our list. I think assuming we have some of the same guys besides maybe like Rick Smith, who you could say it's in the top five that played more than 10 seasons with the Pacers at a consistent level.
Right. Okay, so my number two is a sore subject guy who just recently left the team. Paul George would be my second best Pacers player of all time.
All right, so this is where we disagree. I've got Jermaine O'Neal as number two.
Wow.
So give me the reasons why you think Paul George should be number two.
So I have J.O. number three.
Yeah, so PG3.
I don't think we're that far off. I think George, like Reggie, got the team to the East Finals twice and almost got them to the finals. And if it wasn't for a leg break, would have been five All-Stars in five seasons. And Reggie Miller was an All-Star five times. Like, he was as good as Reggie. He just wasn't here as long. Like, he was such a good leader and scorer. And he, like, you know, everyone was so excited when he re-signed with the team and stuff. Like, he was just so good and meaningful for a little bit, even though it ended up poorly.
So I think part of our, I mean, I have the same, I'm the same age as you basically, but like with the PG is that he was kind of our generation's great, like best player, our Pacers fandom best player. Like when we were growing up, kind of like in our high school to college years, he was the best player on the Pacers. But I just have Jermaine O'Neal number two because Jermaine O'Neal could have been MVP one season. You can never say that about Paul George. Jermaine O'Neal was like the leader of the Pacers for a couple years. He was the best player on their best team in maybe franchise history when they won 61 games. I mean, I think it's very close. I'm not going to say Jermaine O'Neal blows Paul George out of the water, but they're pretty close.
In the brawl season, J.O. was incredible. He only played half the year, though.
Yeah, so that's kind of like taking Paul George's leg break season to kind of half seasons less even, but
not even have gotten Paul George's best career season on the team. Like, he's only been in the NBA for what, 6-7 years? Like, he could still he's only 27. He could still in theory like hit another level.
Oh yeah. I mean I'm looking at Pacers season, so like Paul George at the end of his career might be better than Jermaine O'Neal.
Right. I'm just saying it's kinda funny because you're putting me in a spot where I kinda wish I had put Jermaine too, because Jermaine O'Neal had his prime season on the Pacers, right? Around 03 to 05, whatever you want to say with his best season. But we never got Paul George's. I just think he was so good and meaningful and almost got them to the finals against LeBron James that I would have put him number two.
Yeah, I mean, I think in 10 years from now, we could be saying Paul George is a better player than Reggie Miller was career-wise. I mean, because if he goes to a team, wins a couple championships, whatever, can finally put up 24, 25 points a game, you know, you could say, oh, he's better than Reggie Miller all the time. But at least at this moment right now, for a Pacer player, he doesn't pass Reggie and doesn't pass Jermaine O'Neal even.
That's true. J.O. was here a pretty short time, though. Only like 7 years.
So J.O. was 8 seasons and PG was 7.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah, I don't know. I think that you could kind of go both ways on that. That's a fair discussion.
Yeah, can I give you another hot take?
You guys should yell at us on Twitter if you think that we're stupid for putting – actually, probably me, because I think most Pacer people would put Jermaine over Paul George. But I would love your hot take.
I think what you're saying, it just depends how old you are. Like, I think if you're our age, you're going to say PG. So I think Granger actually comes as close to PG, at least stat-wise, with the Pacers than we think. Like, the gap between PG and Granger is not as big as some people might think.
I actually think between the two, that the best peak season, you got to go Danny Granger.
Yeah,
but he only had like a peak of like 3 or 4 seasons. Meanwhile, Paul George's was every year except his rookie year. He was that good.
So here's here's my one. I mean, it's a stupid reason to say it, but basically points.
Are you putting Danny Granger number four?
Yeah, I got Danny Granger four.
Yeah, me too.
I was just going to say Granger averaged actually literally like the exact same 18.2. I think Paul averaged 18.1 points with the Pacers. So when it comes to points-wise, they were the same. But if you give – so – the reason you would put Paul George ahead of Granger right now is like Paul George had a really good playoff run to the Pacers, right? He had a couple of really good runs where he was one of the best players on the court. But I think Granger's problem was he never got the team right. And like, even as much as we knock Larry Bird for not building this great team, 3 years ago, the Pacers looked like they were on the path to be one of the best teams in the league. And they had a really good roster around Paul George, like perfectly designed to fit him. I mean, they've got basically Paul George could play up on guys and run him into Roy Hibbert. Like, it was just a really good design. And Granger never really got that. because I
Granger's
think
starting could, power forward 1 year was Troy Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? It was Collison was a point guard for a lot of Granger. TJ Ford. I mean, those are guys that are just not that good. And not even that George Hill is much better, but George is a better point guard than any of those two.
Right. Okay. Here's the roster of Danny Granger's best season is atrocious. The starters were Troy Murphy, Jarrett Jack, TJ Ford, Danny Granger, Marquise Daniels. They all had over 40 starts. Roy Hibbert had over 40 starts. That team is bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Granger's 5 years younger, we're talking about PG and Granger as like a really great duo and close in their
Oh, they probably would have made the finals, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've talked about this. If Granger doesn't get hurt, the Pacers don't trade Kawhi. But at one point, before Granger got hurt, the Pacers probably thought, we're going to have a really nice duo with Granger and George on our kind of our small forward shooting guard and throwing Hibbert down there. We're going to be really good like that.
That's kind of what I guess Lance was really good. But, like, Lance wasn't that good of a scorer. Like, that's all they were missing without Paul George as the second guy who could really score.
No, and Granger had the size to play. So, like, to match up against the Heat, Granger and George could easily have both been able to switch against D Wade and LeBron. It was just like it was a nice counterpunch to D Wade and LeBron when you throw in Hibbert two down low.
Yeah, that team would have been really good. Wow.
Yeah, I mean that team was.
Plus,
that
Lance off the bench would have been so welcoming. Like he was great as a starter, but his services would have been so much better as a reserve. I feel like.
Yeah, and I mean in that 1 year they were together, that first time they played the Heat and lost in six when they could have beat the Heat before the Heat were the champions, kind of thing. I mean like. They were good, and they looked like they were going to be good in the next couple of years. And it was just kind of sad that Granger need kind of gave out.
Yeah, but, I mean, looking at his peak season is just nuts. 26 points is crazy. That's unbelievable. I have him 4. 5 was the hardest one for me to pick.
So who did you pick for 5? Because I had trouble with, like – so I had, like, 5, 6, and 7 all kind of clustered. So who did you pick for 5?
Well, because he lives in the town I currently live in, I kind of had a biased answer, but I will pick the Dutchman, the 7'4", Rick Smith.
So he was in my competition. So my last like 3 I was looking at were Ron Artest, Jalen Rose, and Rick Smith. I want to go with Rick Smith
beforehand, but we did not consider ABA players.
Yeah, let's make that known because I just don't know about the ABA to do that. I have to do a lot more research because I'm just not as first in it. My NBA knowledge begins in 1980 with the Magic and Bird era.
Right. Did you not pick Smiths?
So I really want to say Jalen Rose. I really want to say Jalen Rose number 5, but I think I have to agree with you on Smiths only because he played so many years with the Pacers. But like when you get into like the Smiths, Rose, and Artest, they were all like number 2s on really good Pacer teams. So
I had not considered Artest as much.
See, I only consider Artest because Artest, I mean, that 04 Pacers team was so good, and Artest was so good. I mean, Artest probably dropped out of the top 5 just because he ruined the franchise, too, at the same time.
Yeah, he set them back so far.
Yeah. So he's, but like, if you take just his playing on the court, he's up there with at least Jalen Rose.
Yeah, I guess. It's funny they were in the same trade together in 2002.
Yeah, I mean, that was when Larry Bird was rolling, making great trades. Him and Donnie Walsh were building a really nice
like they ended up. Not only did they end up getting in a brawl and like having to have just an awful season because our best players were suspended, now no one wants to come here because the team just looks like a bunch of thugs. And you have to trade away Ron Artest, who's like one of your best players ever. That was just one of the worst days.
Yeah, and that was Reggie's last season, that brawl season. Like, going into the season, the Pacers were the favorites to win the championship, or them, and it was like them and the Pistons and the Spurs again. And it was better than that Pistons team that lost to the Spurs in 7 that season. I mean, it frustrates me that whole
Artest
season.
And J.O. were all stars the year before that. Like,
it just frustrates me because I remember. I mean, I was young. I was like 8, so I really hadn't experienced that many like sports letdowns yet, as I would later in my life. But like, I remember my dad just telling me like, "Oh, they're going to be like really good this year. They might win a championship." And I was, and like the Colts were good, and I was like, "It was great. It's just great to be an Indiana sports fan at that point." And then. Got to re-wake
up. And the following season, like Jamal Tinsley comes to town and stuff. But that's an interesting. I just went with Smiths, like you said. He was there for 11, 12 years. I can't remember one of those two. And his stats never like blew you away. Like he could really score, but like just have being 7 foot, whatever, 5'4" is such a huge presence. Like he just altered the game so much, like almost in a Hibbert-esque way. But he did it for 12 years, and he was just a monster.
Yeah, I mean, and he had some pretty good seasons. I mean, in the mid-90s, I think he averaged, it said 18 points at one point.
Yeah, he only had one season over 18, but that is super impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he was playing with, I mean, I guess that's when Reggie was at his peak too. I mean, him and Reggie nicely overlapped together, and they kind of made a nice duo where I would almost say they were the better version of like a Roy Hibbert, Paul George in a sense.
Yeah, I would say they're definitely the better duo, yeah. Especially because of Smith, again, Smith's defense. Like, it wasn't like he didn't blow you away. He wasn't like a block master or anything, but just having a 7'4" guy standing under the basket is so hard to score on.
Yeah, and you remember the 90s, there were actually centers in the NBA. It wasn't like now where you can be a skinny dude to play center. It was like you were banging bodies with Shaquille O'Neal and Patrick Ewing every night.
Right, and like he could shoot well from the free throw line, so you couldn't foul him. Like he did all the things. He checked all the boxes you want a big man to check, even today, like back then. And
yeah, he was just a really quality Pacer player.
He was great.
He was just a really quality Pacer player. It was. I'm sure if I was alive then, I would have a much higher. I just have a better opinion of him because I just never watched him play.
Yeah, I've seen him around town a lot. He is so tall. Like, it's crazy.
So with this is going to get a little off topic, but I met Kareem Abdul-Jabbar one time, and he doesn't look at you when he talks to you. He looks above you, so he doesn't, like, slouch. Does Smith's, like, look at you when you talk to him, or does he like, slouch down to you?
I haven't really, like, talked to him one-on-one, but I've seen him, like, talk to people, and it kind of seems like he knows that he's so tall that he kind of takes, like, a step back.
Okay.
So it seems so awkward, if that makes sense. Like, there's more than a normal amount of space between you and him.
Yeah, because sometimes with those, like, really tall people, they don't want to, like, look down because they get, like, a hunch then because they develop, like, their back gets screwed up.
Right.
So they, like, either just look ahead and talk to you or, like, you got to step back is a good idea.
So it's his son, Derek, who now plays at Valparaiso, is also 7 foot something.
Man, I want those jeans.
Went to high school with me, and he didn't look down at people. He did look down at people, excuse me. He talked normal.
Okay, I wish I had some of those 7 foot jeans.
Don't we all? He was really good, basketball player, both Rick and Derek. But yeah, that's kind of tough. We haven't even hardly talked about Jalen Rose's time with the Pacers. I didn't really consider him for five just because he wasn't there that long, but he was pretty good in 2001, right?
Yeah, he had a couple 20-point seasons with them, right? Or I guess the other 20-point one was when he was with the Bulls. But he had that he had that MIP year in 2000. Him and so like him, Granger and Paul George have all won Most Improved Player, but he was just like he was kind of Reggie's number two when they were in that early 2000s, and that's the farthest the Pacers made it was with Jalen Rose as the number two. So I mean,
yeah, that is true.
Like I said,
he shot 40% from three that year. He was pretty good in that.
Yeah. Well, once you get past Granger, George, O'Neal, and Reggie were all the best players on a Pacer team. After that, you get into like the Smiths and Rose and Artest, you're getting into like the guys that were number two to those guys, basically.
The top four is whatever order. Well, no, number one is set, and then two through four is whatever order you want to put Granger, PG, JO, and then five is a debate.
Yeah,
I don't know a lot about the ABA Pacers, but George McGinnis, I know, is the best ABA Pacer, and I imagine that if some historians will say he should belong in the top five, and I'm almost certain he does, but I don't know anything about the ABA, and I don't know what the competition level was as good as the NBA, so I cannot speak on that.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna try to do any ABA talk. I know one. I think Mel Daniels a pretty good player for the Pacers?
Yeah, he was an ABA player.
Yeah, so, but because basically with like, I mean, besides with Artest and Rose, at least they each only played like 4 or 5 seasons with the Pacers at kind of their peak. I mean, you could probably throw Mark Jackson somewhere in there too. He's probably below them, but that's kind of where you end up because they're just history wise, we don't have a huge rich history in Indiana.
Right.
For Pacers basketball, at least.
That's just because they've always had, like, a one leader. They've never had, like, a sweet team. Like, they could have if Granger and PG were together. But
They're a younger team, too, right? They've only been around for, like, 30, 40 years now, I guess.
Yep.
Almost 40.
No,
30. 30s. 30s. Right? They 70.
No, 40s. Yeah, 70-something. 40,
right? 40 years now.
40, you're right.
But, like, they also – and they just weren't that – I mean, they've only been good, like, basically in the 90s they were good. And in the early 2000s they were bad. And they were kind of good again the past 8 or 9 years. And that was kind of it.
Right.
They weren't good in the 80s. They weren't like they have huge stretches of just not being good, basically.
Yep. Probably like a 20-year run.
Like a team like the Lakers and Celtics are good usually every 5 years. They get good again.
The high market teams just cycle. The Pacers really have to go through a full rebuild just because they can't just get guys like those teams can.
Yeah, they got, right? Reggie, Jermaine is a trade, but Reggie, Paul Jordan, and Granger were all draft picks. They were all draft picks either, I think, George was 10, Granger was 17, and Reggie was 13. Yeah, so, I mean that shows how. I mean, they hit on some really late round first round picks. That's
and hence why we want them to tank this year. Well, don't want them to, but would not be mad if they tanked right. this year.
I guess the only top I think I can think of that they've had is Rick Smits, right? He was number two behind Ewing that year, yep. wasn't he? No.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it was Smits. Yeah,
that's correct. And then, yeah, I think that is it. Actually, that's all I can think of. Except for after this year, they will have a high pick. But we want them to succeed, and hopefully to do that, they stagger the minutes of Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner, which you wrote about this week. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I wrote for IndyCornrows.com. I wrote – basically, I just went through the Pacers players. I went through the roster and just trying to figure out how McMillan would basically sub guys in and out. So I did it like the first quarter was at the six-minute mark and the three-minute mark, and so who would be in the game? Like – I wasn't like exact science. Like I know there was somebody that did Sixers minutes. Who was the guy that did the Sixers minutes?
Eric Sidewider.
Yeah, he was probably much more precise. I was more kind of rounding off, but I was trying to figure out how to stagger them basically. And so I was trying to figure out a way they could stagger Oladipo and Turner's minutes so that one is on the floor at all times. Because if one of those guys isn't on the floor, they're going to be pretty bad on the offensive end of the floor. Probably they don't really have any great offensive players. Including, I mean, Oladipo and Turner aren't not great offensive players either, but they're their best ones. But it's hard. I mean, like, I always made fun of NBA coaches. Like, I made fun of Scott Brooks back in the day for not staggering Durant and Westbrook's minutes. But it's hard to stagger them because you don't want to play your guy 38 minutes, but you also you want to play him with their best player a little bit too, and it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Well, the Wizards had the problem with Scott Brooks this year where, like, they didn't want to stagger Beal and Wall, and so they'd end up playing, like, Brandon Jennings too much and stuff like that. It bit them in the butt so much. But like your first lineup with the in the stagger has Depo out and Lance Stevenson in, and then Sabonis out for Turner and Joseph in for Collison. So that's kind of like a pretty good offensive lineup that Turner can lead, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Collison and Bogdanović should be the first two just because of the two oldest players, and they're and I think Joseph and Glenn Robinson are going to be the most like those at point guard and at small forward will be the most even minutes. So like Collison might get more like 30 a game. And Joseph like 18, but I think Bogdanović and Robinson will be about even in minutes yep. all season long, each between 24 and 26, depending on or you know that kind of range.
You can even see Lance at the three if they want to go smaller, but I don't
yeah,
know.
I can definitely see that. I just don't
at the four or something.
Don't know how in a small ball lineup who they could play at the four that's not Young or Sabonis.
It's harder to go small ball too when your best player is a center because you want him out there in your ideal lineup, but
yeah, but like. So, like, they couldn't play Robinson at the four, right? That just wouldn't work, probably, right? Robinson no,
they could
or even,
play, they could play Bogdanović, but probably not Robinson. Robinson doesn't have good enough shooting to me to play stretch four.
Because I had Bogdanović at, like, the four because I was basically trying to avoid playing Jefferson as many minutes as possible.
Right.
But he's going to end up playing, like, 13 a game until, like, TJ Leaf shows up and shows, like, he's kind of good. But
well, you kind of said, too, like, you want to eventually supplant Al Jefferson with Leaf and EK and Nick Bogu.
Yeah, I mean, this season's got to be Leaf. I don't think EK is going to – I mean, he's a second-round pick. I don't know how well right. they're – how many minutes – I don't know how many second-round picks get any minutes their first season even.
No, it's pretty rare.
Yes. So there's that. And then there's, I came to the issue also of – so, like, I know we talked about Sabonis playing the five, but him and Turner in is probably just going to be a like a coin flip of who plays center and who plays power forward based on the other team's lineups.
Yeah.
Because you're going to want Sabonis to be with the bigger bangers, banging down with guys, but you're going to want in turn to guard the quicker guys. So it depends what center the other team plays and what power forward the other team plays.
Right. I think you'll see a lot of matchup heavy with them just because they have so many guys that are kind of like close in skill level, you know?
Yeah. And then what did you say? Sorry.
I was going to say your first – you have two lineups that have neither of the two guys you're staggering in, and they – it's the beginning of the second quarter and the end of the third quarter, and it's Joseph, Stevenson, Robinson, Sabonis, Jefferson. But in the other one, it's Bogdanović for Robinson, but the rest of the guys are the same. Do you think that'll work well, or is it just like to give the guys the appropriate rest?
Yeah, I think their bench is going to get murdered. I think they might be able to hold a little bit of their own on the court with their starting lineup, but I mean, their bench is going to get just – I mean, unless the bench can just score, like unless Bogdanović, they can just feed Bogdanović to shoot threes in that first lineup or something crazy. Like Jefferson just – I know there was one point Jefferson scored like 18 points in the game, that kind of thing. But they're going to get – on the defensive end, it didn't matter who they played because if they're playing Jefferson, the defense is screwed no matter who's on the floor basically because Jefferson's not going to play very good defense.
Right. They need him to improve quite a bit if any of these lineups without the two of them are going to work.
Jefferson's because, not going to improve. He's like 35 at this point. 35 players don't improve.
Yeah, he's been on a quick decline. I don't. Yeah, we've exhausted our discussions about him. But yeah, those lineups will be interesting. I think Joseph's going to have to do a lot of creating in that group because, I mean, Lance and Robinson are okay at it, but they're not good enough that I want them to do it consistently, and they'll kind of turn it over a lot. So we'll have to see how those end up breaking down. But it's pretty good to see that it is pretty possible having just a lot of guys, like we just said, who are so close in skill level that like you can kind of change your lineups on the fly and end up staggering minutes and not ever having a lineup that seems like so much worse than any of the rest or so much better, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if they really wanted to and Oladipo kind of becomes a good enough ball handler, they could play a lineup with Oladipo as point guard and then like play Robinson and Bogdanović together. I mean, there's that scenario too out there.
Yeah,
I didn't do anything too wacky in this thing yet. I have a couple of like kind of crazier lineups that I'm going to write for my next article, but this is sort of what I had for like.
Right. Kind of this is for like if they're competing too, because you stayed away from the rookies.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope TJ Leaf by about 40 games in is like looking like a decent player, because if they didn't get him to play like even 5 to 8 minutes a game to just take away that from Jefferson and push Sabonis to the center position for a little while, that would. The pitchers are just slightly better, just like a little bit better.
Yeah, and you mentioned that at the end. And, you know, it'll be funny because the only chance he'll really get to play at first is like garbage time, right? But the start of the season schedule, like we talked about last week, is so hard that it could be in the first couple of games you start to see him get on the court and show what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, he also might end up with the Mad Answer part of the year. There's a good chance of that.
I think EK will, but I don't know. I don't know if Leaf will.
I guess we haven't had a first-round pick in, what, 2 years now? So I don't remember how much they played with the Mad Answer not last time.
Right. Who was their last one?
I'm blanking on who the last first-round pick is right now. This is not –
Me too. Well, that sucks. That's embarrassing. Oh, Miles Turner, isn't it? Duh.
Oh, yeah. It was Turner, right? It was Turner. Miles Turner never played with the Mad Answer, right? He never did, right?
No, he did not.
He was hurt for a little while when he started the season. That was it.
Uh-huh.
If I remember right.
Right.
The last, like, kind of a couple unique things with this. So I had Oladipo right now playing the entire fourth quarter. I don't know if you're ever going to want to do that for him. It was just the only way to stagger it. I mean, like, if you don't play Oladipo the whole fourth quarter, you probably play him to the end of the third. So that's just kind of my thought if they want it. And Oladipo has in the past played the entire fourth quarter. I think he played the entire fourth quarter for the Thunder last year, at least in the playoffs a little bit.
This might sound weird too, but like, what if you do something where like, Corey Joseph plays the two, and Joe Young gets like a little tiny stint at the one just to get Depot that rest. Maybe not in the fourth quarter, but like at some point.
Yeah, and then you could push Jefferson off. Yeah, that might not. That's a pretty good kind of way. I don't know how much they trust Joe Young yet, too.
Yeah, they keep bringing him back. They have to eventually think he's going to take some sort of step, right?
Yeah, you hope so. I mean, they're not paying a lot of money, so it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, right. They keep picking up his option.
Out of the rotation, though, good call, Damian Wilkins.
Yeah,
and EK won't play. So pretty much the only two guys that you might get minutes that you didn't talk about would be Leaf and Young, but I don't think they'll play that much at the beginning of the year at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just took Leaf out just because I know he's not going to play till like game 40, in my opinion, like at least right. Anything. No. And then Young, I mean, Joe Young, you don't know. You just don't know.
So right you currently have a lot of guards that's closing the game over Glenn Robinson.
So that's going to be that way for now, I think. But I think mid-season I could see Robinson flipping. I can see the whole minutes thing flipping where Bogdanović starts, but then they kind of switch the minutes around and then Robinson ends. Like I had Robinson ending the first half just to see how that – I mean, want to test that out to see how it goes.
I think he could end up closing. I think – like I don't know. I'm kind of torn because he showed flashes of being good, but he is also most of the time not like, just pretty consistent like rotation level guy, not like starter level guy. So if he can make those flashes turn into – consistent play, maybe he'd be that guy. But if not, I'd kind of hope he stays as the rotation guy.
He also might be better, especially if he doesn't have to play a bulk of the minutes. I mean, I don't think he's ever played a huge amount of minutes except for when Paul George was hurt. But if he can stay, he might be like one of those players that needs a lot of energy. So when he's playing 20 minutes a game, he is playing a lot harder than he would be playing if he's playing like 30.
Right. I think he's probably the number one guy on the team I'd say you have to have with Turner instead of Jefferson.
Too. Yeah. Yeah.
Just because he's young and he can't really create at all, and he's a better defender, and you want Turner out there with better defender so he can save his energy for offense. I don't know. We'll see how McMillan does it. I don't really trust that he'll do the right thing.
Yeah, it's I don't have much faith in McMillan. Although I was reading about McMillan a little bit. I mean, he did win 50 games one time as a head coach. I mean, so it's not that he's going to do it this year, but he's not. I don't think he's super duper terrible.
He also got an improved roster over two seasons ago and had the same record basically. So
worst record, right?
Worst record. Yeah, it's not encouraging. Maybe he was better in the older style basketball, but we'll have to see. But this is a really good piece. You broke down the rotation really well. I'd highly recommend that you read it at some point if you're saying.
Speaking of, I should do my last point about Steve. So I only had Lance Stevenson playing 13 minutes, which I thought, like, when I started making, I'm like, that's really low. But I mean, why? Like, you're not a big fan of Stevenson. So you probably agree with the 13 minutes thing. But I think at some point, if Stevenson kind of shows some flashes of his 13, 14 Stevenson, I wonder where they start to play him at.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up actually signing another wing with one of their last roster spot. And then you see more Glenn Robinson at the two and this new wing at the three, or this new wing plays the two. So not Stevenson.
So Stevenson, not Stevenson becoming like a 20-minute kind of guy by playing some.
When you think of Lance Stevenson and the Pacers, you obviously have vivid memories of him being really good on that conference finals team. But yeah, he's been absolutely horrible in the NBA ever since. Like, he could barely even make a team for 3 years, like I've said on this podcast before. So, I mean, if you get him trying, get like old Lance, maybe, but I'm not convinced we will yet. But I could very well be wrong about that.
Yeah, my only thought is Stevenson somehow becomes 2013 Stevenson. He probably ends up taking minutes away from the Robinson or Bogdanovich because he ends up playing small forwards. I don't think you're going to give Oladipo less. You're going to give Oladipo between 30 and 35 minutes a game. I mean, because he's probably the second best player on the team.
Yep.
You traded Paul George for him. You got to at least let Oladipo prove something. Get a lot, you know, run himself out, basically.
If we're asking for 2013 Lance, can we also get 2013 Al Jefferson?
You're all right. Fair. That's a fair counterpoint. You're right.
I would love that because then we'd have a hell of a bench.
Was 2013 that year Jefferson made like all NBA?
I don't remember if he was on the Jazz, the Hornets yet that year, but I know that he used to be phenomenal.
Yeah, he had a really good Hornets year one time. I think he made like third team all NBA or something like that.
Curious now. I don't know. I do feel like I remember him making all NBA. 2013 Al Jefferson was 21.8 points or 11 rebounds per game. Yep, that was his first season with the Hornets. He was unbelievable. Let's get that guy too.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we brought in Jefferson way towards the end. I mean, he has like a 23-point season in Minnesota. Jefferson was pretty good. I didn't realize Jefferson was that good in his prime. I knew he was good. I didn't realize he was that good.
Yeah, well, he had a high points per game at one point. That's why Larry Bird signed him.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's a depressing one.
Yes, it is. Well, I'm excited for the season. I will be at the first preseason game to write down all their lineups and keep track of what they end up playing because I am very curious to what they will end up being.
So are you going to use SeatGeek for your
I am going to use SeatGeek actually for the first time to get my tickets to this game. But I have heard great things about SeatGeek, haven't you?
Yeah, so let's turn this connection to – so SeatGeek is the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast, if you didn't know out there. And so I actually used – SeatGeek to buy those Kendrick Lamar tickets. I went to the concert last weekend. But if you use the promo code LOMBA, you get a discount on your tickets. I mean, have you used the site yet? You been on there yet?
I've been on the site. I've never actually used it to buy anything yet, though.
So, like, have you been looking at where you're going to buy tickets yet, or you just kind of just went on?
I just know I'm going to want to be in the lower bowl. Just to be close, and I don't think they'll be that expensive for that game, but tickets aren't actually released yet. So,
okay. When you look, they got this little, like, they have like a little deal score basically next to, so like you can rate them by score. And so like, if there's like anything in like the mid 70s, 80s, even 90s, they're like, be a giant green dot. You should buy those tickets because it means you're getting a good deal.
Okay.
It's kind of a neat system. And it also it'll show it with fees. So you don't have to pay that stupid, like, oh, it's $40 or actually it's $65 because there's some $25 fee that nobody tells you about.
When IU was in it, I bought tickets from StubHub and I had like $40 in fees. So that's really nice.
So yeah, there's that. So I like SeatGeek, and remember to use the promo code LOMBA to get a discount on those tickets.
I'll have to do that. You all should use SeatGeek too. We highly recommend it.
Yeah, I'm sure when I come home, I will be using it to buy Pacer tickets multiple times over probably Thanksgiving and winter break and all that stuff.
Well, we'll have to do that. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Locked On Pacers. We'll be sure to have some interesting topics to talk to you about next week. Hopefully the Pacers end up making a signing or something with their last roster spot by then, so we have a lot of juicy material to talk about. But until then, this has been the Locked On Pacers podcast, and we'll see you next week.